again, and welcome to another episode of No Prize Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Bud Young, and with me, as always, is the man across the pond, the machine, Johnny Hughes. How are you, Johnny?
Salutations. May your wedding day bliss exist forever.
Oh, ding, 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 ding. Congratulations to the new royal couple.
Yeah.
Johnny taking busy time out of chauffeuring the new couple around over in jolly old.
Yeah, unfortunately, my invite got lost in the mail.
Well, everybody's watching it on TV, I'm sure. You know, we're going to talk about books that have come out this week, and we're going to jump right in, and we are going to talk about the final issue of All New Wolverine, issue number 35, and it is the final, again, final issue of this book. After this, she is going to be returning to her X-23 roots. Apparently, they're going to take the name away from her. I don't know why. Maybe because there's 100 other Wolverines running around. What do you think?
Sorry, 100 of other characters. That reminds me of the Cable book we're going to talk about in a little bit later. But I don't know. I don't understand why they have to take the name away from her. I think this book's been... At times it's been average, but other times it's had some really good moments. And I quite like the way it's kind of dysfunctional in the way it's going. I don't understand why we have to go back to X-23. What does that mean for X-Men Red? I don't know. Tom Taylor, I like his writing normally. So this is just to catch you all up if you haven't been reading this book. We're in alternative future land, potentially. And everyone's living a happy life apart from Laura, who's on a deathbed. But she gets into her head to take out the last dictator in the world in Victor Von Doom. So she's going to try and succeed where the Fantastic Four failed forever, like it seems. Story-wise, Tom Taylor, I like his work some of the time. I liked him when he did some stuff on Earth 2 before it turned into another Superman and Batman book. Tom Taylor here, it just... This storyline feels like an overhang from Secret Wars from a couple of years ago, you know, when the Beyonder created the battle world and everything was kind of messed up a little bit. This yes. feels kind of like an, it feels like a bit of an overhang from that, which I can't say I really enjoyed. The fact it's not as dysfunctional as previous issues have been, which kind of takes away some of the fun. It's more of a straight-up book. It was all right, I guess. When it comes to X-Men and Futures, though, you know it's never going to happen because we're never going to get there. So it kind of has the double whammy of A, it's not going to come true, B, it's a way to kill off a character, kill off a book before it gets rebooted. Therefore, lame duck shouts from me all the way across this. And that's kind of where I'm on this. I'm sorry, it's an invisible woman.
Yeah, you know, I'm in agreement with you as far as alternate futures and X-Men go. You know, I think the worst way to end a series is in an alternate timeline where you never go back and see the present Laura. They spend the entire issue in the future, and then everything is kind of left in the air at the end. It looks kind of like that her and Gabby kind of walk off in the sunset together, but. Nothing takes me out of my normal comic book reading habits than alternate future storyline comics, because it is kind of a big what if that, you know, I think maybe better served, maybe telling a story outside of the normal run of the book. If it looked like there was going to be some kind of repercussions for the character, you know, as a result of them spending time in a future timeline. But for me here, it's just kind of like an alternate timeline story. And next issue, next X-23, number one, they will never ever reference the story again, and there's no consequences.
The problem with future, you're absolutely right, the problem with future storylines is that when other writers decide to mine that particular story, all it does is confuse things. So when you've got Days of Future Past, for example, great story, love it. It is one of the classic X-books out there. But then, lo and behold, you've got Rachel Summers popping up. Where's that from? Then you've got Bishop popping up. You're like, hold on a second, I thought mutants were banned in the future. Oh no, but he's doing something else. So you're like, right, so which one's true? Is it Rachel's future or is it Bishop's future? And you're like, what? It just gets way too complicated. I think if you're going to have a future event, it should have repercussions. People should do things that kind of give like a nod to the reader that they're on that particular trajectory. Yeah. And whilst I get that the future's not always written before loads of Doctor Who fans get on my back about this, it's fine. Things can change, I get that. But for fans, comic book publishers are asking us to invest our time, our energy, and our dollars in this. So if you guys can't even make the effort to make it worthwhile for us, why should we make it worthwhile to buy the book in the first place?
You know, I can see a couple of years down the road that they're going to have a new X-Men book, and it's going to be all – the characters are all going to be alternate future X-Men stuck in the present. It's going to be Bishop. It's going to be Rachel. It's going to be Bloodstorm from over in X-Men Blue. It's going to be, the other Wolverine character from the Ultimate Universe. We're going to have him.
Cable.
We can have Cable, sure. And we can have Nate Gray, because that's going to segue right into our Cable discussion.
So before we move on, all new Wolverine. Sorry for me, Invisible Woman. Yeah, for you.
For me, it earns a clobber simply because it's the final issue of a series, and it's not really kind of a send off to the current character. It's a send off to a future character that we just met two issues ago. So. Clobber for me.
Oh, that was being harsh.
Clobber it. Stay away. All right. So moving on. So I just mentioned Nate Gray, right? So Nate Gray makes an appearance. This 90s throwback reject has surfaced in Cable number 157. You know, until they get around to relaunching Cable with a new number one. We're at issue 157. This book is actually takes place after the 1993 issue of Cable number 54 for all of you, long-term Marvel readers that want to go back 25 years and pick this up. And it is... set, because I guess the storyline, so we have this this bad guy, Metis, who's now Cable is now jumping back and forth in his timeline to confront this bad guy. And last month he had a reuniting with Hope, and now this month he's reuniting with Nate Gray, who I don't remember the last time I've seen this guy in a comic book. Johnny, I don't know if it's been 20 years.
Oh, it's been a while. It has been bonkers amount of time. There's things happening in this book that refer all the way back to 1993. It's like,
right.
It is proper bonkers. But on the flip of that is, if you love Cable, and some people must do because he's in the new He Who Shall Not Be Named movie. I'm not talking about Star Wars. He's popping in that. So, you know, I've kind of, for me, Cable has always been a character that kind of, he just exists. To me, there's been no massive mystery around Cable. It's like, yeah, fair enough. He's from the future. Oh, he's from the future. Now, is it Rachel's future or is it Bishop's future? Who knows? Who cares? He's just from the future. You get it, you understand it, you kind of know where he's from, who his parents are. And I don't think, for all the character development that people have tried to put on Cable, he's nothing but just a bit of a goon. He just goes around and does what he wants, and there's no massive impact. Fans of Cable are going to lynch me for that, but that's fine. What I will say is that for the first time in ages, I have enjoyed this little run. And this is bang on down to two guys who are absolutely fantastic writers, and that's Nonny Nadler and Zach Thompson, who have done a wealth of stuff on the independent scene, including Aftershocks and their own books. This is like their foray into the big two-dom, as it were. And you know what? I think it's a great place for them to start. I know both of them are huge, huge 90s X fans, and that kind of shows through this book. So as Cable wouldn't be a book that I would normally pick up because of these two, I'm giving it its due attention.
Yeah, you know, so I know I sounded a couple of minutes ago like I was making fun of this book because, you know, it, going back 25 years into continuity to kind of pick out a story to kind of wedge this in, I don't want to call it a retcon, but kind of just kind of having a little
don't
adventure.
Don't call it a retcon. I've been here for years.
But... You know, just to kind of bring these characters back a little, Nate Gray, a little Blacksmith, and just have to, you know, have a little adventure from 25 years ago and have it make it even kind of seem a little bit like an old school Cable comic, you know? And that, I think you do owe like a bit of credit to Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson as far as being fans of the source material instead of just saying, hey, you know, they want me to write a Cable arc, here it is. This seems like they've done their research, and they like to where Cable has this current iteration of Cable has him like every issue he's like either, you know, in the Middle Ages or the Dark, you know, you know, fighting dinosaurs or whatever the heck. This one has, you know, they're actually using past continuity in his past book. And I think that it works on a level. I think Cable's gonna undergo some massive popularity with the movie coming out, you know, this weekend. So I think this book might get a shot in the arm due to that. But I give it a flame on. You know, let's get people to check this book out. It is a third part of the storyline, so. It's kind of you coming in the middle of the story, but I enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, it's a flame on for me. I've got to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of long-term X continuity because it is so convoluted. But when you read the book and how the characters interact, it is exactly how you would expect a conversation with future, past, and alternative selves of yourself would sound like.
Right.
It's like a bonkers thing going on. And I like the fact that they've thrown no sort of, I guess, pretension to what they're doing. It's just a straight up action story. And I like that. These guys are really good writers. And if you enjoy Cable, you should check out their stuff. Her Infernal Descent from Aftershocks has number one has just come out like last week. Go check that out. Really, really good. And they've had a host of other stuff, which is just absolutely brilliant. So for me, it's like the flame on Johnny Storm's trying to break down the Inhuman wall on the moon because he thinks he can get through the crystal. That's how flame on this is.
Well, this is probably the book of the week, huh? Let's check out Cable number 157.
Yeah, it is for me. All the ones I've read, I thought it was really good. There is another book coming up that I thought was equally as good, though. So, suspense.
What is it? You're going to have to listen for another 20 minutes or so.
And I'm going to talk really slow. So,
all right. So we're going to jump in out of the X universe and into Marvel proper, and we don't talk a lot.
What's the main Marvel proper? If it wasn't for the X universe, Marvel proper wouldn't bloody exist.
But you know what? I think the X universe almost exists separately from the regular Marvel universe because the shit happens over there is never really ever touched upon in any of the other books, you know. And
I would like it if Marvel did that.
I would enjoy it too. You know, it's just like you think like everything that happens in X-Men is like so earth-shattering and world-changing for should be for everybody, and then you know it's like they never touch on anything. It's like they exist in their own little microcosm. So
I think I've said for ages that I think some of the comic book universes need to be split so people don't interact as readily as they do. This makes no sense that Batman's on the Justice League. Batman should just exist in his own world. Because it's the same works for the Avengers. If Captain America's having such a really bad problem and he's having such a hard time dealing with one particular villain, why is he never ring up Thor and say, hey, Thor, drop a hammer, you know, and get the problem sorted? It's just bonkers how that never happens. It's just crazy. And that's true of all the interconnectedness between the universes. Why don't you have it like it was back in the 60s and 70s, where the JSA and the Justice League met once a year in a crossover, and that was it.
Right.
Never the twain should meet. And I think maybe, you know, Marvel could get away with that by splitting off the X-Men in their own universe, that whole mutant expulsion thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I want to say one shared universe and different, like, you know, Earth 1, Earth 2, kind of like DC does, you know?
Definitely.
Just vibrational changes. You can just hop from one world to the next, but not necessarily where you could just send a memo. Hey, Thor.
Yeah, if you think about it, though, if the mutants were expelled into their own universe, that would create that, and they still remembered it, that would have to be key, because then they would have to have that chip on the shoulder that they haven't had for so long. You know,
right.
The mutants were always about a metaphor for repression and for how people have been treated in the past and how minorities have been treated. If someone's getting expelled from a comic book universe, that would generate a level of there'd be characters who think, yeah, fine, let's just go along with the flow. You know, it doesn't matter me, Bob. But then there'd be other people who would get really annoyed, and you kind of think, well, you know, Scarlet Witch, for example, if she's still having the thing with Vision, you're kind of like, well, that means she can't have the thing, because now she's... And that would potentially push some of the good guys into doing negative things, which would make the books more interesting again, which is what we want.
Well, I don't know if you might not know about this, but Scarlet Witch is no longer a mutant.
What?
That just blew up your whole argument right there.
Well, there's other mutants banging other non-mutants, I'm sure. But I don't believe it. I've not read Marvel comics for the last 25 years. How can they change something as fundamental as the Scarlet Witch not being a mutant? Next, you're going to be telling me Vision's not an android. Bloody hell.
No. Yeah, I know.
Bring back Machine Man. Right now. Bring back Machine Man.
I like Machine Man.
Me too. Good old Steve Ditko.
Oh, yeah. Good old Steve Ditko. Was Machine Man creation.
Absolutely love Machine Man.
Oh, Jesus.
How did his arms stretch so long?
Yeah, where did they come? Where did they come from?
And then the Jocasta story. Right. Okay. Crack on, next Marvel proper.
That you can find Machine Man in your dollar bins, loyal readers.
If you're lucky, they're probably 10 cents. Maybe.
Oh yeah. All right.
But
so
honestly, it's a great. To be honest, if we're joking about this, but Machine Man is a great way to pick up some early, well, maybe not early, but some late Steve Ditko stuff that still has the same pizzazz as his Spider-Man stuff. So if you see some and they're in a dollar bin or they're in a 50-cent bin, or hell, if they're giving away on free non-comic book day, pick some up, because they are good.
It is good stories from great creators, which...
If you think Data from Star Trek has emotional problems for an android, read Machine Man.
Oh, we're going to have people looking for Machine Man now.
Tell you what, I picked up the 4-issue miniseries with Barry Windsor-Smith art.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
I picked that up for like £2 for all 4 issues, and I absolutely love it. Machine Man 2020, I think it's called.
Yes.
What a great miniseries that is.
It's, you know, in 2 years from now, it's going to be present time, Machine Man 2020. Same thing with Iron Man 2020.
I better get some flying cycles then.
No kidding. What's up with that? Everything's going to be all spiky.
I'm going to dig those out. I absolutely love that book.
It's good
cool.
stuff.
Crack on.
All right, crack on. All right, so we're going to jump into Daredevil. This is issue number 602. I want to first before I get into this particular issue, I want to shout Charles Soule out, the writer of Daredevil, for just being consistent. I don't think he's had a dog of an issue since he started writing Daredevil, and he's been writing Daredevil for a while now, and I just dig this book month in and month out, and there's never a throwaway issue. Every issue continues his storyline. Every issue is, you know, the characters grow a little bit. These characters are not in the same place they were when he started. And you can see this in particular in this particular issue, where the storyline has been going on that that the Kingpin was elected mayor of New York, and you know, everything happens exactly the way you would think of with the Kingpin being elected mayor. You know, he outlaws vigilantism, and now so Daredevil's a criminal. But he also hires Matt Murdock to be his deputy governor, which was genius, I think, because now he can take him off the street, and now he keeps Matt Murdock close, and then things don't quite work out the way Kingpin planned, and he is the victim of an assassination attempt, which takes him out of the mayor role, and who is the next in line in succession but Matt Murdock? And I thought that was a genius move. It was something that I should have seen coming, but I didn't. So kudos to Charles Soule for that. And now he's the mayor. So if you think that it was tough for him to get away and fight crime before, how do you go out and fight crime when it's more important for you to be the mayor and run the city than it is for you to get into costume and go fight ninjas? So to me, this book has kind of been flipped on its ear a little bit, where, you know, it's more important for him to be heroic as the mayor and guide the city. But of course, you know, Matt never makes the right decision. That's kind of what makes him Matt Murdock. So he ends up going to fight as Daredevil anyway. And he's, you know, the Hand, you know, they're the generic throwaway ninja villains of Daredevil. You know, they could have better villains, but I enjoy the Hand. They're a good foil. So, you know,
careful how you say that.
Oh, Johnny.
To be fair, I am only one step away from smut at all times.
So just to give you, I mean, I pretty much kind of just gave you the whole story, but the other characters in here that are always around that I enjoy, the supporting characters in Daredevil are generally second to none. Foggy Nelson is just as you know, enjoyable to read as he's been for the last 50 years in Daredevil, and he's never really changed from day one. And I really love, he's kind of like Matt's conscience, you know, kind of telling him what to do as far as legal wise, and you know, and just trying to get him to do the right thing. And Daredevil always chooses to do, you know, while it's the right thing, but he always chooses to put the suit on and go fight crime that way. And then, of course, now they had introduced a couple of years ago into the book Blindspot, who is now Daredevil's sidekick, so to speak, or his apprentice hero. And I actually have grown to like Blindspot quite a bit. I think I like that they, you know, the storylines that are coming out of his character. And the Hand is actually in the city because of Blindspot at this point, and they're after him. And I want to just give this book an overall consistent flame on, and this book has been going very well for the last couple of years now. It's one of the books that I think, you know, they can reboot it, they can do whatever. It's always, you know, as long as Charles Soule is writing it, I think he's pretty much been underrated. You know, we don't talk a lot about Daredevil. It's kind of just there. Mm-hmm. but this book is a big flame on for me. I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So, Johnny, now that I, now are you you're not a regular Daredevil reader, correct? So,
well, I'm going to start this particular spot with a previously on Arrow, Oliver Queen, who was a superhero, becomes the mayor of a town and passes an anti-vigilante law that means that he, as the Arrow, can't go out and do what you're supposed to do against all the hordes of bad things that are happening.
You're going to blow me up.
So, you know what? As good as Charles Soule's script is, and the dialogue is really, really good, for me, this is a big fat clobber because I've watched this episode already. I'm really, really sorry. Oliver Queen has been the mayor of either Star City or Seattle in the past, in comic books and on the current TV show. Bear in mind I'm in the UK, so I'm still probably two episodes out from the season finale. Do not spoil it or I will go very bonkers nuts on you.
I'm not a spoiler.
Thank you. But for me, this book just read like an episode of Arrow. It really did. I don't mean to be like all DC about it, but to me, there's nothing in this book, there's nothing different going on than a regular episode of this season's Arrow. I'm really, really sorry. I like Charles Soule. I absolutely loved his Superman Wonder Woman book, which people laughed at me for buying, but hey-ho. I've said that in the past as well. I like his writing. His dialogue is bang on, and it echoes the Daredevil TV series really well when you think about comic books getting their readers from other places. He's kind of hit that same sort of benchmark with how Matt wants to be in the suit more than he wants to be in his business suit. But overall,
all right, so, you know, as soon as you brought up Arrow, I just kind of groaned a little bit because you're absolutely right. This is, you know, Oliver Queen is the mayor. Now this is Matt Murdock as the mayor. So,
just for the record, sorry to interrupt. You've said I am right twice now out of three books. So, all right, this is going great.
Woo-hoo! But, however, as a not regular watcher of Arrow, I enjoyed this book. On its merits, and I was not missing, or not seeing the repetitive storyline that maybe was featured in Arrow because I didn't watch it. So this was a nice fresh storyline, and I enjoyed it. and I personally flamed on this book. I think it's great, and so, you know, obviously we're gonna agree to disagree on this book. I think it's great. I think anybody that should want to read it should read it.
Go for it. I mean, don't compare what happens on the show to what happens in here. It's fine. I will say one thing though. I loved Mike Henderson's art all the way through it. I thought it was
very
really good.
Very reminiscent
of David Muscicelli, or however you pronounce his name. I'm renowned for getting names wrong. Very simple style. Some of the women were drawn in a very Sal Buscema way, which I don't mind because I really love Sal Buscema's stuff. So looking at the book, it looks good. Reading the dialogue, it looks good. But yeah, I've said my point, so I'm fine. I'm not going to reiterate it.
Well,
Clobber, right. All the way down to Yancey Street and back again.
Well... So this one we're going to split on. We're going to say I flamed on, Johnny clobbered the hell out of it. And we'll move on to another book that I don't think we've ever really covered. It's not because, you know, this book's number came up, but it's because I really kind of wanted to talk about this because Matthew Rosenberg is doing something in Punisher the last couple of months that is actually a new kind of a new take on the character. And so the Punisher has, kind of come across the old War Machine armor and has decided to weaponize it. Well, or kind of use it. I don't say weaponize it cause it's a weapon anyway. But he uses this suit way better than Rhodey ever could. and more graphically than Rhodey ever could. And I have enjoyed the first storyline where he first found the armor, which I kind of thought was going to be kind of like a one-and-done storyline, and then he was going to be back to being the Punisher. But now he's returning from this country that he, so just to give you a little backstory, Punisher went over to a small country that was taken over by terrorists, and he was recruited by Nick Fury to kind of go in there and kill the orchestrators of the coup. So he goes in there, and in just what you think, over like 4.5 issues, he just totally starts just destroying everybody using the War Machine armor, any other ways that you've never seen it used before. And it was really kind of a fun read because it wasn't something that you normally saw. And what did you think Frank Castle was going to do when he got big armor and guns and nuclear weapons? He's going to use them. And he does, yeah. Which to me was really kind of fun. And for a character that like I think can get really stale really quickly, as far as Punisher goes, is how I kind of feel about his character. He's kind of great in small doses. You know, he's one of these characters that I kind of think, you know, I don't really like seeing him in a monthly book, because how often can you just kind of redo the same story where, you know, Punisher kills all of his villains at the end.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, this book, it starts a new storyline where it's called Punisher War Criminal, and he returns to the United States after freeing this country. And, you know, of course, he's got the War Machine armor, and he just starts off by going to the bar with no name, which has appeared in many, many different series as the hangout bar for these villains, where supposedly it's, you know, sanctuary where they can't fight each other, and they, you know, apparently no heroes ever know where the hell it is. But he just goes in there and just blows the hell out of it. Which, strangely enough, so this is my only problem with this issue, Johnny, and I don't know if you noticed this, but do you remember the bar with no name?
I've seen it a few times.
Do you remember it from a certain Captain America story from about 30 years ago?
How am I? Don't tell me the pool table hasn't been changed.
No, so if you remember about 30 years ago, there was this character that was running through all of Marvel Comics. His name was Scourge, and he would kill a random no-name or like D-list villain in every appearance that he was in, and he had that pump spack sound effect. That's how you knew it was him. It would just be like a bullet out of nowhere that would just totally – it would just destroy this D-list villain. And he killed several villains, like the Ringer and Basilisk and Deathadder, et cetera. And then it culminated in this Captain America storyline by Mark Gruenwald, where he shows up – Scourge shows up in the bar with no name and massacres about 20 D-list villains all in one scene. And – then that, of course, puts him on Captain America's radar, who throughout the end of the storyline, you know, brings Scourge to justice and then, you know, rips the mask off him at the end. And it turned out to be just some normal dude when you were expecting, like, this big Scooby-Doo reveal at the end. And
we got away with a tooth, wasn't it, those pesky kids?
Yeah, yeah. It just turned out to be some dude. And so anyway, to make a long story short, in the bar with no name, sitting at the table playing cards is none other than Scourge, which kind of took me out of the story a bit, because I was like, what's Scourge doing in the bar with no name? And he lasts all about 2 pages before he is unceremoniously cut in half by War Machine. So to me, I was like, what the hell is he doing there? And then when he's just like destroyed by Punisher, I'm just like, okay, well, whatever. End of story. But so anyway, to wrap up my review of this issue, he ends up now he's back in America. the heroes are not that happy that he has the War Machine armor. So he is he runs afoul of Ms. Marvel or Captain Marvel, and
Captain. She got promoted.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Ages ago.
Got promoted. So he gets into a big fight with Captain Marvel, and you know ends up running a Daredevil and then a bunch of heroes towards the end of the issue, where now it looks like this storyline is going to be Frank Castle versus, you know, Marvel. The Marvel Universe, right? Yeah. So all in all, I thought this was a really fun issue. I thought, like I said, Matthew Rosenberg is doing stuff with the Punisher that I think is fresh and new and no one's seen before. And as much as I was kind of groaning about hearing that Punisher was getting the War Machine armor, and I was like, oh, they're mashing a couple of heroes up again. Blah, blah, blah. This has been fun. I really enjoyed Rosenberg's take on it. I think Stefano Landini's artwork is kind of, simple, but very nice to look at. I really enjoy it. Do you think, Johnny? What do you think?
Well, I've got to say, there's an element of, I am Matthew Rosenberg. I like how his setups are great. I love that. What I would say is sometimes I think the punchline doesn't deliver. I don't understand why Captain Marvel just doesn't absolutely eradicate him. You know, it's like she's got the power.
That's true.
You know, it's kind of like, well, I'll tell you what, I'll knock him to the ground and I'll just fly around and ignore him for a bit and wait for Hawkeye. It just, there's a sense of a lack of logic for how other characters are brought into this. Does Spider-Man really care that the Punisher's got the war armor stuff with what's going on in his own book? I don't know. It just seems a little bit cliched, a little bit, I guess. But that said, it's good that they're trying something new with the Punisher. You're absolutely bang on right that he is a bit of a one-trick pony. There's only so many times you can go after the guys that have killed his family. I mean, has he not got them by now? I mean, even Jennifer Blood has a better reputation than he does for going after the guys that killed the family. I'm just saying. It's a fun book. It is what it is. I like the interaction between Castle and the armor, which is a totally different interaction that you get with Stark in his armor. So that was good fun. I don't understand why Stark doesn't turn up and just sort of like say, okay, like, hold on, it's my armor, so I can just go beep, bop, bop, and shut it down. Because, you know the Castle's not going to be able to be, he's not a techie in any shape, way, or form. But you're right, the art's great. I'm surprised the Rhino didn't want to go head to head and bugged out warp speed. No, it was a good fun issue. I enjoyed it. It's a flame on for me, not like a supernova thing, but for me, this is the book that, on a fun level, matches, I think, potentially the best book, because it is just it's just a bit of daft, parky brain fun. Don't overanalyze it. Don't be me, and just enjoy the book.
Don't be Johnny and enjoy the
book. Yeah. Yeah. Big plot hole. Just enjoy the book.
Don't overthink it. Don't wonder why.
Although
why
I will
Storage
say,
is in the bar with no name.
I've got to turn around and say, it looks like Marvel are back up on the PR, because 2 months ago, if this had happened, it would be Black Panther that was chasing him down. But his movie's been out, so now it's Captain Marvel's turn. 2 months from now, it's Spider-Man. Because his movie's due out. So, hey-ho, Revolve PR, bring it on. Which is a shame, because I think Carol Danvers is a great character, and she deserves better than being stuck on a space station with Alpha Flight. But that's just me.
We can talk about Captain Marvel all day. I don't think she's deserving of being the flagship female Marvel character.
Really?
I absolutely not.
Oh, I absolutely love her. I think I loved her when she was Miss Marvel way back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
I've got so much love for Carol Danvers. It's huge. What they did to her in Avengers 200 is absolutely abhorrent. I don't understand what's going on there. And the whole binary thing I could do without. But when she came back, I like the fact that, you know, the only problem I've got with Captain Marvel is the, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to sound like a complete jerk, but I didn't have a problem with the first outfit, whether it's the belly window or whether it's the thigh highs and the unitard. I absolutely don't have a problem with that. To me, it doesn't really matter if the character's wearing a skin-tight uniform like she's wearing now versus the thigh highs and the unitard. She's I just wish she was drawing a more, more feminine, more curvy, more whatever you want to say. But then again, that's not a Carol Danvers thing, nor is it a Captain Marvel thing. It's a comic book industry thing taken hold. But as a character, I love Carol Danvers. I think she's up there. The only person I love more than Carol Danvers is Jessica Drew. And she's been shafted like so badly, it's unbelievable. Who's your Marvel lady person then that you deserve to be like the queen
one that,
of Marvel?
The one I think that should be like right up there and just have her.
Don't say She-Hulk.
You know, as much as I hated the last She-Hulk iteration, she's up there. But no, you're right. I don't know if there is one that I would. You know, maybe Captain Marvel gets it because they've kind of focused on her, you know, the last several years because they know she's getting a movie. But the fact that they've canceled her book like 5 times in 5 years, it just, to me, it just means that the fans aren't really behind her, you know?
Well, you know what? That doesn't necessarily mean she's a bad character. There's been some absolutely brilliant writers on Captain Marvel and Miss Marvel before when she was Captain.
Right.
So I just think, I don't know if people expect more because she's the leading sort of, I don't want to say feminist, but look at what happened to Mockingbird when you get somebody like Chelsea Kane on the book who writes really creatively, really seriously and still has fun. Doesn't push a massive agenda, but you know it's there. But that makes the character more well-rounded and more engaging. That book didn't sell, and I guarantee you that year that was probably my favourite Marvel book. Spider-Woman, when she went through a reboot and became, when she got Batgirl into the no-nonsense outfit rather than being all boobs and ass.
Right.
That worked, and that got cancelled. I think it's a readership thing. I don't think, or a Marvel thing. It can't be about the characters, because these characters have been around for God knows how long.
Right.
Rant over. Next.
So, you know, I would honestly think that Ms. Marvel would probably be a better flagship character right now than Captain Marvel.
Okay.
I know. You can disagree with me if you want, but I think that...
I can't be honest. I've not read any of the new Ms. Marvel stuff, so I could not say one thing or the other against her or for her. So I'm just glad you didn't say Gwenpool.
Oh, no. I was gonna say Squirrel Girl, but
right, I'm out of here. See you later.
No, but I think going forward, like the future of Marvel, I think Ms. Marvel has the chops to. Be that person down the line.
The problem with Marvel is they've got no patience. That's the issue. I remember back in the day, Wonder Woman comics didn't sell for crap, and DC would lose money on Wonder Woman comics. The only reason they kept them in publication was so that they could license her, and she sold shed loads of merchandise. Now, she's paid her dues, she's been a big character for so long, and people will say that, she was in the Justice League and so on and so on. That's great, but it didn't reflect in her books. Even when George Perez was on the book, it still did not do particularly well. So now she's paid the dues and she's had a movie and everyone's up in arms and everyone loves her and stuff, which is right, because she is DC's premier female character. But she's worked hard and DC have worked hard to make her that. It doesn't happen overnight. Marvel don't have that patience level. Marvel are all about, it's got to be big now, it's got to be a success now, and if it's not a success now, we're going to cancel it.
Right.
And then when they cancel it, they think, shit, what do we do? Oh, I know what we'll do, we'll rebrand it and put out the same stuff.
Yeah.
Forget that it didn't work the first time.
Well, I think
this is the all-new Wolverine X-23 thing all over again.
You know, Johnny, we'll probably maybe have to do a separate podcast about what I think Marvel is thinking when it comes to publishing books and canceling them and then repackaging them and putting them out again. I just don't think that we, A, have the time in this podcast to talk about that, or B, you know, we'll have to kind of put like a preemptive precursor to the beginning of the podcast to exactly speaking our, you know, we are, these opinions are not necessarily those of Comic Crusaders.
Well, you know what? The good thing about opinions, they are neither right nor wrong.
Right.
Everybody has them, and they're just different. So,
right.
If a Marvel guy would like to come on the pod and tell us the thinking and tell me that I'm wrong and my assumptions and my issues are wrong, I'll explain them. You know what? Open door, get in contact, come on the show, we'll have a conversation.
Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe we can do that for our next podcast. Is we will give our reasoning as to what Marvel does, what they do. And I think you know, we might have some differing opinions, but I think it would be be an interesting podcast.
Let's do that next.
Yes, of course. So anyway, to jump into
is a flame on. Punisher is a flame on.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yes. Punisher is a flame on for me as well. So let's talk about our final book that we're going to talk about is the X-Men Wedding Special that dropped this week. And it is the preview to the wedding special. It's surprising to me. I actually thought the wedding was going to be in this book. So spoiler alert, they don't actually get married in this book.
This is part of my problem with this book because the things in the X-Men book, the standard book anyway. But this is just kind of like, it's just rehash. It's rehash for rehash's sake. And I get there must be some fans out there who don't know when Kitty first got to the mansion and when Colossus loved the ghost and all that usual bullshit that happens in the X-Men universe. But you know what? I was there for this. I don't need to read this. I know what happened. Bring it next. I'll just get on with it.
And you know what? So we're talking about the first story right now, which is, you know, should have been a trumpeting return for Chris Claremont to actually write a story for Marvel related to the X-Men. And Todd Knock, who's not a terrible artist, he's really good. And instead, it's pretty much Chris Claremont, pretty much just rehashing his stories. You know?
Unbelievable! It is I can't. But when I saw Claremont's name on the cover, I was like, yes.
Yeah, we're gonna get an original Chris Claremont story, right?
I don't even think he wrote it. I think they had to put his name on that because the photo started everything.
Yeah. And, I mean, Colossus isn't even in the book. I mean, what's he in, like, one panel, flashback, a couple of, you know? I'm like, I wanted to see, like, his take on Kitty and Peter now as opposed to, you know, just giving us a Kitty Pryde flashback story. And that, I was really kind of disappointed about that. But, you know, I mean... Obviously, Chris Claremont was the big name work for hire for this issue, and they pretty much told him, "Don't give out anything, and this is it." You know,
I get that it's supposed to be a leader into something, but it's like I don't need to see this. I don't need to know how it happened. To me, the characters that were portrayed in this book are a million years different to the characters that they are now.
Right.
And the whole thing where she says, oh, I'm really scared, I'm really nervous. It's like, I get the people get nervous about weddings, but for Christ's sakes, you've fought the universe. You've done this, you've done that, you've done the other thing. You know, it's like, really? You're nervous about this? She's the leader of the X-Men. It's like, no. It makes... it's just... If you're a long-term X fan and you want to see something that gives you nostalgia pangs, fine, knock yourself out. flame on. But if you're looking for something new and you're looking for, ooh, let me get excited about the event that's going on, then I'm sorry, it's clobber. Because this is neither.
So that's what this first story was like, was every panel that you're looking at going, oh, I remember when this book was good. You know, and that's pretty much how I felt. Oh, I don't feel that way now. I feel this way back then. I thought it was great seeing Lockheed. I haven't seen Lockheed in a long time. So that was good.
I was like, that threw me. You know how you talked about your issue with the bar with no name?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, last time I picked an X-Book, Lockheed was talking and he was flying into the Brood Central to eat brood eggs. I'm like, what's he doing back? He's not in the regular book. What's going on there?
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Maybe there's a no prize story coming out to explain why friggin' Lockheed is back in this book. So I guess that's the first story. So the great thing is apparently we're probably going to be able to clobber this book three times, right? So let's move on to the next story. The next story in this wedding special is the Boys Night Out story, which is written by Mark Guggenheim with art by Greg Land, which you would expect maybe something really great to come out of that story. And instead, it's a bachelor party for Peter, I think. Yes.
It's going to be a bachelor party, like the groom-to-be, right?
Yeah, you know, they kind of take him out to, Vegas or whatever it is, to gamble. So you would think that, with all the Doctor Strange damnation stuff going on, that maybe you'd see some demons, which, I mean, you do kind of see a monster in the first story, but they did a... Oh, this does take place in the Inferno, the devil...
Boys Night Out months ago during Secret Empire.
Yeah.
It's like, what? And then, there's a thing, it's just...
So you want to know what my big problem with this issue is that it's Colossus's bachelor party, and so they have Nightcrawler, Iceman, Gambit, and this new guy, Pyro.
And there's no strippers.
There's no fishnets anywhere
that
in this
is
book
so,
at all.
See, that, right now, that is not a bachelor party. Sorry, there's gotta be some fishnets at least once.
I would love to see like them go into the strip club and have everybody dressed up like the White Queen.
They've done that before. Do you remember back when Morrison was on X-Men?
No.
Scott Summers was having a bit of a crisis of confidence, so he ends up going to a club and all the strippers are dressed like the Black Queen in like the mask and the. Do you remember?
He bumps into
Wolverine and he's like, what are you doing here? He's like, well, what are you doing here, Slim? And all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the pole dancers are gyrating around and stuff. And it's Grant Morrison, so you get a little bit of a curveball when you read Morrison's stuff, which is good because some people love him and some people hate him. But they've done that theme before. And so you kind of think, well, actually, that should work. I mean, superheroes, both male and female, work with people who are fantastically gorgeous. Why would they not be attracted to people who walk around in skimpy clothes all the time? Yeah, so it's great. Bonkers to me, but it did happen. It did happen. Go check it out. It's the Grant Morrison run of X-Men.
Which is probably that was another better run than what we're experiencing right now.
People loved or hated it, really, to be fair. I don't think there was any middle ground. I think he created loads of new characters that worked really well, and then unfortunately the dictates of Marvel were like, oh, well, you know, you've got to get back to having Magneto and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, the whole idea of X-Men was that he was trying to push it past its recurring themes and ended up having to just say at the end of it, oh, look, it's Magneto again. And like, so it fell on its ass at this. But I think
they should bring back Beak. That's my.
I like the sisters. You know the
Stepford triplets.
I like them. I thought.
I like them too. And didn't he create Quentin Quire too? And
yeah,
yeah, okay.
A whole bunch of mutants from there. Which right. Don't hear much.
Because yeah, Josh I mean, Whedon. I like Grant Morrison's run on X-Men. I thought it was different. I thought it was I thought it was original. So Peter's bachelor party ends up with a fight against the demon and apparently with a you know continuation into next week's X-Men Gold. So yay there.
Could you sound any less enthused?
I mentioned that the wedding is not exactly in the wedding special, which kind of threw me for a loop and made me a little upset. So I was kind of mad that the actual wedding wasn't here. So instead we get Peter's bachelor party, and then the final story is Kitty's bachelorette party, which, you know, I don't know. It's just the whole issue was kind of anticlimactic for me.
Yeah, it's definitely it's an I don't, not an I do for me.
Nothing really much happens even in the bachelorette party except Callisto coming out of the woodwork and saying, "Be good to Peter." Like what? Like I mean, it's not like Callisto and Peter's relationship was ever something that was put up in the Hall of Fame in X-Men relationships. And for her to kind of come out and say, "Be good to Kitty," "Be good to Peter," where Kitty has kind of always come in, Kitty and Peter, you know?
Yeah, I like the fact that Kitty on a bachelorette party is down in the sewers fighting Callisto, and nobody mentions anything about the stench that she must smell like when she comes back. It's just like, two minutes later, she's back. It's like, come on, cut me a break. But that does lead us to an interesting conversation topic. How many ex-couples can you name?
That is going to be some research, right?
Right. Pick a number. Let's see how many you can get. I'm going to give you 20 seconds to think of some. On your marks.
Oh,
get
Jesus.
Set. I'll tell you what. I'll give 30 seconds. Write your number down and see how many you get.
All right. We're going to do this in our heads?
Yeah, just write them down. Listeners, just count to 30. You'll be fine.
All right, so.
Don't tell me any because I might have the same ones.
All right, so.
I think I'm stuck out. Oh, of course, there's that one. Right, stop.
Oh, damn it. All right. So I got...
How many have you got? Just
two,
total,
three,
first.
3, 4, 5, 6. I got 8 in 30 seconds, but there's a ton more. So...
I think I've got 6. Although there are, I can think of a couple more.
All right.
Right. Okay. So who's your first one that you
well,
have?
Well, of course, Jean and Scott. So Jean and Scott is the premier X-Men relationship. So then I started thinking about who has had multiple relationships in the X-Men.
You cannot count Psylocke as all of them.
I've got Psylocke.
Psylocke plus everyone. That's it. So, job done.
Okay, so you know what? I didn't even have Psylocke on my list.
Did you not?
I did not. So this is my list. So after Jean and Scott, who is the obvious number one. So mm-hmm. then you have Rogue, who was involved with Gambit, obviously. If you remember, Rogue was also involved with Magneto.
Yep, she was.
Okay. And then I have Kitty Pryde with Colossus. Obviously, but if you remember, Kitty Pryde was also involved with Iceman, the pre-gay Iceman.
Did he give her the cold shoulder?
Well, apparently. But this was the so he was with so Kitty and Kitty and Bobby were involved immediately before he came out. So it was kind of interesting. But you know, when the writers decided to go that way with Bobby, then Kitty and Bobby were no longer. So the big winner though is Storm, who at any given moment has been involved with Wolverine, has mm-hmm. been involved with Bishop, has been involved with Forge.
I've got Storm and Forge. Well done. That's a good one.
Yeah. So, I could be... there might be another one in there, too. I got to think. But anyway, did you have anybody that I didn't have?
Yes, I did, actually.
Oh, you did?
Of course I did. It's me. Dazzler and Longshot.
That's pulling one out of your ass right there.
Dazzler, Polaris and Havoc.
Okay, yeah, Polaris and Havoc.
I had Moira McTaggart and Banshee.
Oh, and you could also do Moira McTaggart and Professor X.
You could, exactly. One that I've gone Scott and the White Queen.
Oh, yeah, okay. Scott and, Emma Frost.
And then my last one is Captain Britain and Megan. Yeah. Although I'm not sure you count those as mutants. So.
No, those are the Excalibur days, that's good. Yeah.
So there you go, that's my list in 30 seconds.
So we almost had two totally separate lists other than Gene and Scott.
Yeah, check that out. Yeah. That's how many X-Buds have got it on. And create and split the atom together.
we could even do. We didn't pick any current relationships out, right? We didn't do Nightcrawler and Rachel.
No. We didn't pick old school Lilandra and Xavier.
Or we didn't pick Psylocke and everybody.
I had Psylocke plus everyone. I almost had Wolverine and the guy he was with. Oh, that tells the Wolverine story in the movie.
Mariko?
Yes. No, not Mariko, the one before Mariko, the Native American girl.
Oh, Silver Fox?
Yeah, but I couldn't remember her name, so I was like, you know what, I can't have that one.
Yeah.
I couldn't have Mariko, because Mariko's not a mutant, so it's fine. And Moira, yes, I know Moira's not a mutant before people write in, but she had a mutant son, and she dated a mutant, so that pretty much makes her de facto a mutant.
Oh yeah, she's part of the X-Men family anyway. So
she's gone.
I don't think there's any. The X-Men relationships have kind of been a little. I don't want to say incestuous, but they've pretty much been keep it in the X-Men family.
It is crazy how they've kind of, it's always been like, there's never any repercussions either of Psylocke going out with so many or whomever. And you know what, if that's her thing, that's her thing, that's totally fine. But there just doesn't seem to be any sort of like, it's like, oh, yeah, Psylocke won, Psylocke's flirting with Scott. Yeah, but she's also dating Archangel. Oh, yeah.
There's never been any kind of like, there's no way I can be on this team anymore now that we broke
up. Yeah. There should be. Yeah,
there should be like, I'm sorry, I can't fight crime with her anymore.
Yeah. I'm not going to save you from mutant kind anymore because that's what you need. The Brotherhood of Dumped Mutants. That should be the next bad guy.
Oh. The X-Men.
Oh, we need a Marvel person on this pod now so we can sell this idea and make lots of money. Yes.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. The X-Men. The EX/X/Men.
I am so there.
That would be fantastic. See, we just came up with an idea. Marvel, get on it.
Yeah.
We've seen all the other crap that you put out. This one isn't just a great idea.
I'm going to start writing a script right now.
Yeah. Oh, we have to come up with a team. So that'll be our homework for the next podcast. We'll come up with a team of X-Men. and sell it to Marvel.
Yeah.
Sounds perfect. All right. So on a high note, we're going to end this episode of No Prize Podcast. And, you know, maybe we should, hey, you know what? Maybe we should put a poll up on Comic Crusaders of how many other relationships they can think of.
Yeah, go for it. Sounds like a plan.
Let's talk to Al about that.
Yeah, let's get started.
All right.
Alternatively, we could also pull up who your favorite relationship was.
Oh, there you go. You know, is it Colossus or Kitty, or is it Jean or Scott? That's probably the. I don't know.
I don't know if Jean and Scott's so passe now. I think people are past that. I'm not sure.
Oh, so maybe we should put up, is it Jean and Scott or Jean and Emma?
Right. I'm going to think now.
I just said Jean and Emma. Oops.
That says more about you than it does about comic books.
Actually, I think it's because I have Johnny on the brain, so I was just trying to, you know, give him a little eye candy.
Well, to be fair, none of them wear fishnets, so I'm going to have to lower my tone just a little bit. Expectations are going to have to be not met on that occasion.
All right, so join us again in a couple of weeks. We're going to we'll run through your books, tell you what you should be reading and what you shouldn't be. And, you know, and congratulations to the new royal couple in England, and congratulations to Colossus and Kitty, who did not get married in this issue.
Oh, great. See ya.
Bye-bye.
This is an official On the Cover Capes podcast.